everyone here from the Massive Report podcast. I'm Brian Phillips. Alex is here. Sam, Corey, Mark. I got three words. Glory to Columbus. That's all I have to say.
Woo!
To watch the final episode of a championship year, the Massive Report podcast. It started in a bar and it ends where it's been for months in our respective rooms. But we feel a little closer now. And actually, you guys were in the same place on Saturday night. And I was home scaring my cats, yelling at the TV, but yelling with excitement. So before we get into the nuts and bolts and the X's and O's of the game and why we won and who was important in that victory, I just want to kind of get a sense from you guys. I want to live vicariously through you because you were all there. Some of you were working. Some of you were there as fans. Bart, were the beer lines long? That's the first thing I want to know. You're muted.
Here we go. I will say, I actually, this was a first for me, at least since I became of age about a decade ago. I did not purchase any beer. One of my, what I did in committing to go is I wanted to make sure masked up the entire time. I had a N95 underneath my supporter supply Columbus crew mask. So, made sure it was still crew branded. And you can, of course, find more about those at supportersupplyco.com. I think that's the website. But it was so cool. I was there with my dad, my old man, who took me back, to the first game ever at Mauffray Stadium, then Columbus Crew Stadium. And we were in literally for that game, the top row of the second deck, last row for that to get in. This time we were in the last row, top corner of the SUDEC. And it was just, it was special being able to be there with him. It was special to be able to watch this, watch this team win, obviously, on there. And it was surreal, just being in there and with so few people. And for me, a guy who's always otherwise in NORDEC, not being in NORDEC, and it did, kind of tug on my heartstrings a little bit there at the end, wanting to kind of just sprint down to the other side of the, stadium and get in there and hug everybody and get my arms around them to sing at the end. But it was still, it was incredible. And it helped that the game was just such a shit pumping. So you could just really kind of sit back. There weren't the nerves that you were used to or would expect going into that game because it was just such a decisive win. But it was amazing, just absolutely amazing.
Now, Alex, I think you were a bit closer to NORDEC, weren't you? Or were you in there? I forget.
I was in NORDEC. Yeah, okay, the La Turbina section, where usually I sit kind of in the first row of the Hudson Street Hooligans part of the section. So a little bit different vantage point than where I usually am, but just a few rows off for the most part. So it was great to be there. It was definitely surreal. I echo what Bart said, kind of going into the game when we hosted MLS Cup last time. You had people kind of making a day of the whole thing, and I arrived by myself probably 45 minutes before kickoff and just kind of walked straight into the stadium and straight to my seat. And I went with my brother, but we don't live together, so we kind of drove separately and then arrived at the stadium and kind of got there and met him in the seat. So it was just a different experience. I was 6 feet apart from everybody. I know on TV it looked like there were a lot of people there, but legitimately in every direction I was 6 feet from everyone except my little brother. It was a really surreal experience. I think for a lot of people, and I think I would include myself in this, 2020 has been a little bit of a nightmare. I mean, I think I have missed being able to see people and missed being able to go out and do things and, missed being able to kind of live your life. We've all had to kind of put large aspects of our life on hold for an extended period of time for our own safety and for the safety of others. But that game was kind of a little bit of a dream in the middle of that nightmare. It was like a little bit where you could just kind of go off and, forget about all the craziness in the world and just watch soccer and watch your team win. And it was a great night.
Were the loud noises and colors and bright lights, were those a little bit alarming to you? Were you, was it a little bit of anxiety because you hadn't been around people and noises and lights for so long?
It was the first crew game I haven't watched in sweatpants.
It was definitely weird. I mean, one thing I will say, and I was mentioning this to my brother before the game, was that, you know, I remember in 2015 being incredibly nervous about the game. And just the first couple, you know, hours of that day, I was legitimately not enjoying myself because I had so many emotions and I was so on edge. Portland were coming, they were a good team. And I had even more of that this time because you had Nagby out, you had Santos out, you had all these emotions. And then you're getting into this section and, you know, you notice somebody two rows down who's drinking a beer, and because they're drinking a beer, they've got their mask off. And you're like, oh man, like, I hope this person doesn't have COVID. Like, you had all these other extracurricular things going through your head as well. So I was a wreck before the game. So yeah, not so much the bright lights, but yeah, the people, it was definitely a little bit stressful. I think it was a different game. It was very, very different.
Yeah. Well, there's no question. I mean, just watching it on TV, there seemed like there were more people there than there were. And it seemed like they did a really good job with trying to replicate the atmosphere of what it would have been like. And obviously, you know, short all those people, you can't do it. But I felt like it looked and sounded really good on TV. And I quickly forgot that there were restrictions on how many people could be there. I don't know, maybe because I stayed home and watched it with my wife. As far as the game goes, I just didn't have any anxiety about it at all. I was just happy that it was happening. And I, to underline your point, Alex, in 2015, I was like, you know, I was grinded going into that game. I just, for whatever reason, I didn't have a great feeling about it. And I won't say that I had this weird confidence about it, I guess. It wasn't like I was going to shout it from the rooftops that we're definitely going to win, but I felt really calm about it. And then, and we'll get to this, when they went out and started playing and I saw how they were playing, I just felt really good about it. I don't think I've ever had so much fun watching a crew game. It's the polar opposite of like that Nashville game where it just wasn't enjoyable to watch at all. It was so nervy. And this one just was a celebration of everything we've gone through with the story arc of save the crew to saving the team to building a winner to winning a championship. And to me, it was sad that we couldn't all be together, but I felt like it was the next best thing. Ori, you cover the team on an intimate basis. Did the players talk to you after the game about the atmosphere for this game specifically? And did they notice? Did they get some feel from the people like yourselves that were there?
They talked a little bit about the atmosphere. I mean, Caleb Porter, when we talked to him Sunday afternoon after the virtual celebration, he was saying, you know, I want to do this as I want to echo how much I want to do this for the fans. I don't know if they understand how much I want to win for them. And that's something he said throughout the year. And he really wanted to make a point of that. After the game ended, you know, obviously when you're celebrating and whatnot, getting to a press conference is a little not on the high priority list. So people did come, but it wasn't until pretty, pretty late. So I had to be heading off by that time. But I saw the quotes and whatnot. At that time, they were just talking about, you know, what happened in the game and, you know, the emotions that they went through and whatnot. But I mean, unbelievable experience. I can't believe that, you know, this is my first season covering the team, my first year with you guys on the site and on the podcast. I went and covered 10 crew games. They won all 10, including a championship. Wow. You know, this pales in comparison to what I was doing as a journalist at the University of Illinois, covering losing basketball teams and football teams that went 2-10. right. and couldn't do anything in the Big Ten and whatnot. Of course, I was lucky with some non-revenue sports like gymnastics and volleyball and baseball. But, you know, to see, you know, this is a team that I pride myself in, you know, supporting as somebody that was born here and as somebody who says soccer is their favorite sport because it is. So, unbelievable experience. I'm so glad that I've been able to cover this team. And, you know, thank you guys for welcoming me with open arms to the site and to the podcast. And looking forward to 2021. A lot more games to cover next year with CONCACAF Champions League, a Campeones Cup, potentially at the new stadium, and U.S. Open Cup coming back. So 2021 will be exciting for the crew.
Yeah, and we'll get to that, Ori. I'm going to count on you to give us, because not all of us understand because these other competitions and where are they played, who are we playing, and what does it mean, and do you build your roster differently because of these? And so we'll get to that a little bit later on. Because I don't think people are as, at least myself, you know, I try to, soccer is such a complicated game to follow because there's so many leagues and so many teams. And I haven't been following some of these competitions because we haven't been in them. So I'll count on you to explain that. Sam, great job as always on the visual aspect of MassiveReport.com. I loved your photo essay. Give me your impression of the evening through your eye and your mind's eye. What did you see that you can explain to us?
I kind of agree with everybody's assessment in different ways. I'll start with Ori first because I didn't know that, but my first year covering the crew was the opening game. My first game actually was the opening game of the 2008 season. And I was just a fan shooting from the stands. And by the end of that season, I was on the field covering the team, which is beyond unbelievable for me. As I got there, probably gates opened an hour before game time, which is kind of abnormal. It's a little shorter of a time. Yeah. We got settled. Our media coordinator from MLS was actually great. He was very flexible of how we can do things and how we can cover things. And through a weird string of events, I found myself standing on the top of the Nordic. Which, and I tweeted about it at that time saying, I'm standing in the same spot, roughly the same spot, where I shot my first ever crew game. And we know how that ended. So I'm standing in this spot and I'm like, oh boy. I was nervy. My wife would tell you, I was a wad of nervous energy. I was like cleaning things. I was like wiping down lenses that I'm not even using for this game. I was just kind of moving things around and I was like, okay, I just need to go. I can't. I was incredibly nervous, but man, I tell you, Lucas's goal, you're like, oh wow. Then watching Etienne's ball curve around Stephen Fry's arm. And I'm like, this is over. We're going to win this because Seattle couldn't get anything going. And I'm like, I actually told Ori and Patrick at halftime, I said, if we're still up by two in the 80th minute, I'm going to go ahead and go to our trophy presentation spot, which is actually in the 200 section. So we're basically shooting the trophy presentation from the moon. Yeah. But
that just speaks to how confident you were, Sam, because we saw what Seattle could do with 80.
Right, exactly.
Right. And that's where I got nervous.
Yeah.
And I think, and they said it on TV, they go, the biggest cliche in soccer is the 2-0 lead is the most dangerous lead in sports. And I'm thinking, yeah, I know I'm a cliche, but when I used to coach kids, little kids, I'd say, 2-0 lead is the most dangerous lead in sports. And it is. I never feel good about 2-0, ever. So that's where I started to get nervous. So that third goal, that's where I got most excited because I knew that it was done. We'd finished the job. Let's get into the game itself because obviously Seattle was not prepared for the way we played them. And the stat that shocks me, though, is the possession, 65-35 in favor of Seattle. If you had asked me without me looking, I would have never guessed that. So it goes to show that possession isn't everything, and Seattle had no quality possession. The stat that they showed at halftime was that Seattle's goal chance in the first half, based on what they were doing and not doing, was 0.05%. The expectation of a goal was 0.05, pretty close to zero. That's how we threw them off their game in very dramatic ways. And before we talk about the goals, because that's easy to talk about, Ori, speak to what we did defensively as a team to completely throw them off their rails.
So I think they obviously focused a lot of the attention on those big three attackers that everyone was hyping about the Sounders for the entire season, Ladero, Morris, and Rui Diaz. I mean, Alex had a great tweet after the game essentially saying, you know, to Aiden Morris, you can take Nicholas Ladero out of your pocket now.
Yes.
Aiden Morris comes in for Darlington Nagbe, the 19-year-old homegrown kid, becomes the youngest starter in an MLS Cup final, and puts together a phenomenal performance against a guy who's a two-time champion with the Sounders and has come up with big-time performances at this stage. So they kept them in check for sure. And, you know, at the same time, the center backs, Williams and Mensah, have been solid as ever. They're never going to disappoint. This season, I can't recall many instances where those two had bad performances. Mensah didn't have a bad performance all season. Williams didn't really either. The one player I thought defensively that had an unbelievable game was Milton Valenzuela. And
yes,
seeing the way that he played, nobody could dribble past him. And he had Jordan Morris running at him. Jordan Morris couldn't get the ball. I mean, he was able to run sort of sideways, and Valenzuela did a great job to keep him contained. He did phenomenal defensively, and I thought he was the best defender of the day. Like, Mensah and Williams did what we expected them to do. I don't know if anybody thought Milton Valenzuela would be as good as he was in that final, but to me, the most important thing that they did in that game tactically, they came at Seattle with energy. They never sort of settled with possession and slowed things down, kind of like we saw them do against Nashville a couple of times, and essentially going to pass around the 18-yard box looking for that efficient chance, whereas we saw them run at them. We saw them try to pass, you know, maybe four times out the back to get an attack going. And I've said it a million times on this podcast, you know, the amount of times that the Crew potentially could have won a game 4-5-0, it was the same thing again. Mm-hmm. They won 3-0 this time. And they also had plenty of chances with Diaz running at them. I thought Etienne played fantastic as well. Zardes, once again, defending on set pieces is just fantastic.
How many corner kicks did Jossie Zardes head away in that game?
Yeah.
First
ball Jossie Zardes heading corner kicks, that was probably at least 5 or 6 times. And he's done that all playoffs, and he's done that all season. So he prides himself, and I think people need to recognize that he is one of the better defensive forwards in MLS. So unbelievable game from the Crew. And they played with a mentality, like Patrick said, we have nothing to lose. Agnew and Pedro are out. Everyone's picking Seattle. Let's just play our game, and we'll beat them.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, 5 clearances from Jossie.
Man, I thought it was,
and that's like
15.
Every game. Yeah, but that's like every game. He wins every anytime a corner comes into the near post and he's just standing there. It's just like, oh, okay, I gotta head it out, and he heads it with power too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm being facetious because they didn't have that many corners, but I think he probably won every single one of their corners in the air, and I hope that people appreciate that while he didn't get on the score sheet, he was so vital to victory. Because of that, because he did the dirty work. And let's talk about Aiden Morris. Bart, by my count, he made one mistake. And it took him 2 seconds to recover from it and get the ball back. It was a bad pass. That's the only thing I saw him do wrong. I mean, I don't know where this kid gets his cool. But he's a couple months younger than my 19-year-old daughter. And she's super cool, too. Confidence in oneself, that's pretty rare for anyone who's not yet 20 years old. And the swagger, it's incredible.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's the cliche about, you know, being too young to recognize the stakes, or, you know, to recognize that you should be nervous or something in, you know, in this situation. I mean, yeah, just think about that. You know, this is a kid who 36 hours, you know, whatever, 48 hours before MLS Cup, was thinking, boy, it'd be great to make the 18. Think of how awesome it would be to, you know, maybe get it if things go really well And we've got this comfortable, maybe I'll get a chance. Maybe I'll sniff it, you know, sniff some time at garbage time. I instead comes in and it brings me back actually to some of the things that Josh Williams and I know, surprise, surprise. I'm bringing it back to Josh Williams, but what he talked about, the last week about these young players, about, you know, recognizing, you know, when you're going to have your opportunity, make sure, you know, that you're training, you're working hard, you're being a good teammate, every other, because you don't know when that opportunity is going to come. And lo and behold, it comes. And Morris was absolutely phenomenal. Just the energy that he brings at that position, all that motor is just always running. Reminds me of Kevin Nolan, former Premier League player who just, I mean, covered everything box to box. Led the team in tackles, tied with Lucas Zelarayán, which, you know, we will spend a lot of time talking about Lucas and the El Pirata. But he was phenomenal, and it's just one of those. I really think that's the sort of performance when you can do that on that sort of stage. You recognize that this is a big time player, and I think we're going to, you know, be talking about Aiden Morris is a guy who's pushing, you know, gets himself into the rotation. Remember Darlington Nagbe move, you know, next year. He's going to be on the other side of 30. You've got Artur, but Aiden Morris is a guy who's going to push for starts, and he may not be long for Columbus. And I think that's a good thing.
Well, I mean, I think maybe I'm just completely out of my gourd, but Alex, shouldn't we start talking about young Aiden Morris as a guy who should get a look with this young national team that we're talking about? Is he too young for that? I mean, he still could be a U-20, sure, but we've got all these kids already up there. I think bringing him into camp and letting him knock it around before the games count.
I think it's too early for that, but I do think he's kind of one of these players who is in the conversation for someone who, you know, it could be the next in line, like Will Trapp, where, you know, they start. You know, you're hearing about them and then they start getting minutes and then they start really cementing a place. I think the challenge for Morris is that he's behind Darlington Nagbe, who is arguably the best center midfielder in the league. And then he's also got Artur, who's a player that we are obviously heavily invested in, who understands the system and who is very, very talented. With that being said, you know, I think Morris has a lot of things going for him. I think he offers a different skill set than the other midfielders. He's more of like a pit bull kind of eight defender, you know, where you see Nagbe kind of dribble around people. Morris just runs at him and just gets the ball and then just keeps running. You know, he reminds me, growing up, I was an AC Milan fan. I watched Gennaro Gattuso every week. He reminds me a little bit about Gattuso. Well, he'll run at a guy and run through a guy and do whatever he needs to do. But he's like a homing missile on that ball. And wherever that ball is, he's sprinting at it, and he's going to get that ball.
He doesn't get a yellow card every game. I mean, the snarling dog, Gennaro Gattuso, got a yellow every game.
That's certainly true. Maybe Morris just needs a little bit more time there. But, you know, another thing that's, you know, really kind of cool about Morris is a picture has been circulating on Twitter for the last couple of days with him and the Save the Crew Academy banner that he held in the South Stands during the Save the Crew movement. And, you know, so we've got this kid who was in the academy, you know, literally a teenager, holding up a Save the Crew sign. And then you look to the present today, just a couple years later, and now he's lifting the cup for the club that, you know, he wanted to save. So what a story.
It's cinematic is what it is.
Yeah.
It's, and, you know, he'll be a legend.
You'd get laughed forever. Out of Hollywood if you gave script.
Before the game, I said, you know, something like it really, the result to me hinges on how well he plays. And my thinking was, as good as he's been when he's asked to play, this is a completely different level. And my thought was, just don't screw it up. You know, don't make a bad horizontal pass into an attacking player. Don't do something like that. What we saw was a kid who that was ready for the moment. And I can't, I mean, I know on the site we gave him a 9, I'll give him a 10. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I was just flabbergasted at how well he played.
Well, and the other thing is, I mean, you have to keep in mind that there is zero doubt that Seattle thought before the game, okay, we're in good shape here. All we got to do is target that kid. Yeah. And, you know, we'll just get the ball to Ladero. He's going to get by this kid in 2 seconds, and then he's through. Then he's one-on-one with a center back, and, you know, he can take that. You know, we'll just keep hitting that center back 1v1 because this kid's not going to stand in the way. And you could tell very, very early on in the game that strategy was not going to work. And I think not only did people in the stands realize it, but I think the crew realized it. And I think more importantly than anything else, I think Seattle realized it. And when you saw those players start to realize, oh no, they're getting a lot of really good chances, and oh no, their center midfield is still better than ours, even without Nagby, you know, reality started to set in. And I think it took them probably 50 minutes before they could kind of get their feet back under them. But at that point, the game was over. It was 2-0. And you know, the wind was out of their sails and they were in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we can't review the game without talking about Lucas. You know, I've kind of saved the best for last, because it was a sublime performance, a brace for him, plus an assist. The first goal was a great ball from Harrison. Perfect. And there's going to be a lot of debate in the offseason about, well, should we bring in his heir apparent? And we've complained about his defensive play at times during the season, but he can still do that, and he could still get up and down the field. It was a perfect ball. It really was a thing of beauty, right, Bart?
It absolutely. And I'm, you know, I'm one of Harrison's biggest defenders. And that's why, because even for the defensive lapses and the clearances, I mean, this is what he brings you. And on the absolute biggest stage, but you think about other times, think about that NYCFC playoff game, that just dagger goal he scores. He produces for this team on the big stage, and he absolutely just serve that one on a plate. And he was dangerous all game as well. And that's, you know, just something that Seattle could not deal with. And I think it allowed, you know, with Nagby out, you also allowed, Aiden Morris to play a kind of simplified game, because you can rely on those wing backs just booming up the sidelines and creating offense from them. Aiden Morris didn't need to do that. But Harrison, that was just an absolutely beautiful ball. It was, you know, I'm on the complete other side of the stadium, and I saw that cross and just end up on the foot, and then slow motion, and it goes in. And for a second, I'm just like, oh my God, if we can't score off that, I don't know. And then, before you could finish, oh my God, no, it is a goal. And it was just absolutely phenomenal. Just wonderful, wonderful placement, as you get to watch the replay. And Lucas, to just not mess around with it, places it absolutely perfectly. He was such a difference maker all night.
The first goal, from my vantage point in Nordeca, I was right in line with the goal line. Like I just happened to be like right in that spot where you could just look straight across. And like you said about slow motion, I called my dad after the game and I was like, yeah, the way that ball just trickled across the line was like the great. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I went back and I watched the replay and I was like, oh, okay. So I guess it didn't take like 10 seconds for that ball to cross. It was incredible. I mean, that moment where you just saw him connect with it. I mean, that it was such a perfect cross, and you just saw Lucas connect with it. And it was, I tweeted this after, and I think I tweeted it the next morning too. I have been seeing that specific goal looping in my head. I think it's the second goal, third goal. Like, I acknowledge that they happened, but that moment, that exact moment when Stefan Fry tried to get his hand down and he couldn't, and you saw his hand drop and he couldn't get it there, and the ball just goes right under his hand. I will never forget that until the day I die.
Now, Sam, I don't know if your camera eye caught Stefan Fry after that first goal, but it was like the meme that's been going around the last few weeks of Derek Carr of the Raiders on the bench, where his chin is down and then he looks up, but his eyes are still just somewhere else. And it was the exact same look on Fry's face. he was so hot at his team. Both of those goals, that look, I mean, he was pissed. I don't know if you saw it or not, or if they showed it on the big screen, but it might have. Like,
my eye was plastered into my camera as I was following Lucas's celebration.
Yeah, but it was just so like, look it up. Yeah. Look it up.
I watched those highlights. Like, you don't understand. I did not sleep until Sunday evening. Saturday morning.
Good Lord.
And I was in disbelief. Actually, Murph, Patrick Gildan, and myself were outside the stadium participating in some celebratory beverages at, I think it was like 12:30. We were out there until about 2:30 in the morning. Wow. I didn't get home until 3:30 in the morning.
Wow, you're in trouble with the wife, huh?
My wife was fast asleep. She didn't but I watched those highlights at least a dozen times in disbelief, because I'm like, and I literally watched those things happen with my own eyes and my camera, and I have the photo proof to show it. But it was that had to be like that goal specifically. One, I can't believe I actually got the shot. But two, it was amazing.
Well, my favorite goal was actually the NTN goal. And it was because Lucas, their Seattle Shorts might as well have been on the Moffray Stadium ground, because they were convinced that he was going to just shoot it. And he didn't, obviously. And the finish by Etienne was so slick. I love that goal. That's going to be one of my all-time favorite crew goals, because Lucas just played them so hard, Ori, on that one.
Yeah, I think that's probably the goal that comes to my mind first from the, I mean, obviously the third Lucas goal.
Oh, it was beautiful.
Is the best like individual goal, because he just upper 90'd Fry and he just starts looking away, and it's like, that's the moment where you're like, it's over. Columbus are champions. But second goal was a full team effort. Aiden Morris actually started the play and got possession back, which typical Aiden Morris, huh? And then there was a cross, and I believe a Seattle defender miscleared it, like a low header. The ball just was like flying in the air, and then it got to Zellerayan somehow in the middle. I mean, you want to talk about composure. You want to talk about world class. You want to talk about, you know, finesse in his touch. Fantastic. He had it teed up for a perfect finesse chance, and then he just said nope. Because I was looking – so that was a goal. That's the goal that's nearest to where the media is. So I saw that play a lot clearer than I did the third goal. So I saw Etienne like this. Etienne was like, hey.
Waving his arms.
Hey. Yeah, Etienne was wide open. And he's like, give me the ball. And Lucas saw him and's like, okay. And then you saw Jossie sort of move out of the way, allow that space for the finesse. And, you know, first time on the floor, finesse shot from somebody that hadn't played in 2 weeks because he was out on the not medically cleared to play list, coming good back point. Into the starting 11. And if Pedro Santos is not out, then Etienne is probably not starting that game. It probably would have been Santos on that side with Zellerayan and Luis Diaz, because Luis Diaz, with his playoff performances, has essentially played his way into the first choice 11, I think, especially going into next season. We'll get to that. But that was a team goal. World-class finish from Etienne. He's got that new celebration now, you know, like warming himself up. So.
And that was a great celebration, by the way.
Yeah.
Top tier. Right
there. And at the same time, he's probably the unlikeliest goal scorer from the game, because you expect Zellerayan to be the one in that moment to succeed and score, get the assist, or Zardes, or potentially – I mean, it's basically Zellerayan or Zardes in that situation. Etienne has scored a couple of goals, but –
we know that based on the third goal, Lucas could have easily scored that shot without passing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Sure. He had his pick of where to put Fry wherever he wanted. So yeah, he could have definitely scored on that. But yeah, the fact that he chose to pass it off, and that just the beauty of that one touch shot and how much curl it had on it, and he fived hold the defender.
Yep.
You know, I mean, there was just so pretty.
And then, as that goal was scored, obviously the thought comes to your head. And then when it gets to halftime, it's like, all right, Seattle's down 2-0 again. Are we going to see the Western Conference final? And I remember talking to Pat and Patrick at halftime, and Patrick was essentially mentioning, look, Minnesota came into that game. This is a team that just played like less than a week ago. They had to go and beat Kansas City on the road, and they don't have the freshest legs, and they're on the road. Whereas Columbus had fresh legs, they're at home, and you could even say fresher legs because they haven't been able to train consistently for the last 3 weeks. So it's not like they've been, you know, gassed at training or anything. So, you know, hearing that, it's essentially thinking to yourself, all right, Columbus is set up in a better position going into the second half. But we saw Seattle basically control the game for the first 25 minutes of the second half. But Columbus started to build stuff back in there around the 65th, 70th minute. And Seattle's just throwing subs out.
Yeah.
Before we get to the second half, I just want to say that first half was the most dominant performance I have seen from any Crew player ever from Lucas Zelarayán. I have never seen anyone just kill a team the way that he did. They threw everything that they had at him. They tried to put multiple people on him. They tried to do everything.
Well, yeah, he got knocked around.
Tore them to shreds.
Right.
He got knocked around a little bit. He was – the thing about Lucas is he's always willing to put himself in harm's way and to win balls and to do the dirty work. And I'm sure that he was mindful that, look, I got a 19-year-old kid behind me. I need to keep an eye on him and make sure that I'm just not leaving him out there to die. And he did what he needed to do. He was just everywhere. You know, it was an amazing performance by a player that we're so lucky to have, a guy that Anthony Precourt would have never spent the money to get. And we are in such a much, obviously a much better place than we were just a few years ago. It's really, I mean, the story is amazing. And then, you know, you mentioned Diaz. I think that we've seen his growth. There were times early in his Crew career where he would just run himself into trouble or play the ball long too early. I think we saw that a lot where he would just try to switch the point of attack rather than breaking people down 1v1. And he assists the third goal, the dagger goal, by using his skills that we know he has and breaking down defense and sending that ball across for Lucas to finish, you know?
And I think you watched Lucas on that second goal as well, because I mean, and that also shows just the maturity and the growth of Lucho Diaz, because we know that, you know, earlier this year, last year, he gets, after beating that defender and getting in the box, even from that bad angle, he is winding up and he is blasting that as hard as he can at Stephen Fry. And instead, and I think Seattle knew that well as well from the tape, because you saw the way that just as they bit on Lucas on the second goal, they bit hard when he faked that shot. And just, I mean, I think we also forget that, or it's easy to overlook that was past the 80th minute. This is a guy who's been running up and down the sidelines nonstop all game. And just, that was, I mean, just when he beat one out on that in the corner before even it set up the goal, that's how you know that this game's over and how you know this is going, because of the way that he willed and was able to just go and beat that and win that physical battle with his speed and with his physicality to get control of that ball, then and going in and able to find him to draw those players in on him, and then just quick head up, sees Lucas and knows, I know I might be able to take care of this and put this one away, but I know that he will. And yeah, you give that ball to Lucas Zelarayán in that space with that time and no doubt about it. Off the left foot, though, we should know.
Yeah, Alex, you had something to add?
In the body language. Yeah, I mean, the body language from the Seattle players, even before that goal, where they were, you know, really starting to get argumentative with the referee. You just saw that something was not quite right. And then after that goal, you just saw a bunch of the Seattle players just fall down. Like it was as if the whistle had blown. They knew it was over. The fans knew it was over. I have never screamed louder on a goal in my entire life. And I was doing it through a high filtration mask, which I, you know, did not know that was possible. But it was the most incredible thing. It was the cherry on top of an amazing, amazing performance from Lucas. And, you know, it's gonna go down in history. I mean, we're going to be talking about that performance for years. You know, I will be talking about the performance when I am an old man. I will be saying, oh, yeah, I remember back in the old Cruz Stadium. That's, you know, now that community park, you know, I saw Lucas go upper 90 with his weak foot, you know, to bury the Sounders. I mean, it's amazing. What a season.
Only two men in the history of MLS have had three goal contributions in an MLS Cup final, Scalotto and Zelarayán, hence why I made that graphic on the Massive Report Instagram this morning. By the way, follow us on Instagram, Massive Report. There's some cool stuff on there made by yours truly. So, yeah, Scalotto, Zelarayán, three assists for Scalotto in 08, two goals and assists for Zelarayán. In 2020, MLS Cup heroes in black and gold. They're from Argentina, man.
Absolutely. And the fact that we haven't even talked about Eloy Room yet tells you a lot about what you need to know had you not watched the game. Seattle just really didn't have many good looks at the goal at all. I mean, that was a long flight home, I'm sure, because they were not prepared properly for that game. They seemed to be bewildered.
Also, another crazy stat. Seattle's made four MLS Cup finals. They've only scored one goal. They've only scored in one of those finals, which was the 3-1 win against Toronto in 2019, because they won on penalties in 2016 after a 0-0 tie. They got shut out by Toronto in 2017, and then they got shut out by Columbus in 2020.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, so much for their dynasty. That was the talk pregame. Alexi Lawless running his mouth. He picked Seattle 3-1, and that really pissed me off.
It's so unusual from Alexi too, because he's almost always right when he makes predictions. I'm so glad they pay him all that money to make these great predictions. You know, I mean, he's such an asset to the American soccer community.
He was so smug about it too, as always. I mean, you got to give him credit. He's confident in his convictions, even though they're mostly wrong.
I know a lot of idiots that are confident.
Yeah,
that's right. Alexi Lawless is an idiot. I'll say it.
So, Alex, speaking of villains, the reception for Don Garber at the trophy presentation, give me your take on that.
So a couple takes. Number one, I knew it was going to be good when – well, let me backtrack a little bit. So, first of all, there were a bunch of kind of old-timer Crew fans who were at this game. I was not expecting to see them. And we had kind of all, after the final whistle, had all kind of moved around a little bit. We still were keeping our distance, but a number of people kind of left or moved around to go be with other people. So we kind of all congregated in an area. And the conversation was, where's Garber? Like, and that was the thing. Like, everybody wanted their moment to, you know, to really just, you know, we've already won the cup, right? So we've accomplished dream number one. Dream number two is to kind of bring back the Save the Crew stuff and really let Garber have it, you know, really let him kind of feel what was going on. I have heard that he was kind of having some difficulty getting his speech out due to all the volume. I can't say whether or not that's true, because I did not hear a word of what he said over the speaker system, because the noise in Nordeca was so overwhelming that you could not hear a word of what he said. And we were literally looking to see when Dee or Jonathan were going to pick up the cup, because that's when we were going to stop. But we were not stopping until one of the two of them physically lifted up the cup. And as soon as, I think it was Jonathan, like, picked it up, then we stopped. But, like, until then, we were not stopping. But the moment I knew it was going to be really good was when people started chanting, "Where's Don Garber?"
Yeah, because he sent Abbott out there first.
Yeah, so we were like, bring him.
I wasn't sure if he was.
We were waiting for him, and that was going to be like the crowning achievement. Like, we're gonna boo this man so badly that we're not going to be able to hear him speak, and then we're going to lift the cup. Like, that was how that night ended for us. So I can't tell you what he said. If you're asking for that, I didn't hear a word of it. But I'm very, very glad. And I'm usually not someone who boos opposing players. I'm not somebody who boos opposing teams for the most part. Don Garber does not like being booed. He does not like being talked over. He does not like any of that. We saw that at the draft when they were chanting Save the Crew and he got nervous about it. He needs to learn what will happen to him and what will happen to his league if he tries to steal somebody's team. And I hope he remembers the fact that he got booed that bad and the fact that he's going to get booed every time until all of us are dead, every time he walks into a Columbus soccer stadium. And I'm dead serious about this because he's going to try this with some other team someday. He's going to try it with RSL. He's going to try it with somebody. They're going to try to put a team in Vegas sometime in the next 20 years. And when that time happens, he needs to understand going into that decision that we will do everything in our power to ruin his life, because we will.
I mean, well, that's my take on Garber. You didn't really miss much with the speech because his mic cut off like three or four times throughout the whole thing. And it was the funniest thing because he was getting booed and his mic was getting caught.
He was also fumbling his words a little bit. And we need to have like a decibel competition to see which commissioner gets booed the most.
Right.
You have like Don Garber. I mean,
Gary Bettman.
Rob Manfred was getting booed relentlessly in Texas after the Dodgers won the World Series. Roger Goodell, Mark Emmert of the NCAA. The only commissioner that comes to mind that I don't think is really getting booed is Adam Silver.
Adam Silver,
who I think is the best commissioner in sports. But well, you know, this year, Roger,
I mean, look at his you know opposites. I mean, they're all garbage too. He's not great. But
I won't go saying that far. Well,
Hold on. The other thing that you completely missed is that he mentioned Nashville, Miami, and Austin.
And it's that's true. He mentioned those
to get booed at this point.
Yeah, at an MLS Cup ceremony, why mention the two expansion teams and then the new team that's coming? That should be something that should be in the state of the league address.
It's almost like he's tone deaf.
On TV, I literally was not paying attention to anything he was saying. I was only enjoying the booing, and that was it. And I was deriving great joy from that. The thing that Don Garber needs to learn, and Roger Goodell has learned this, that he takes it in good humor to a certain extent. He knows he's going to get booed, and he doesn't let it shake him any longer. Garber does not take to being booed at all. And we are his worst nightmare at this point, and there's nothing he can do about it.
Don Garber put himself in the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame. Okay, like this is the kind of guy that we're talking about here. This is a guy who is very, very interested in his own personal legacy. He does not want to go down as a villain, but he is a villain, and he needs to know that he's a villain, and he needs to know that we are going to amplify that message if he ever tries this ever again. We will make sure that everybody in the world once again learns what a horrible human being that he is. But come to Columbus, get booed. That's the way it works for the rest of Garber's life, for the rest of my life. It's the way it works.
It's like we've written the manual about how to save your team. And it's like it's in a big binder. It's got hundreds of pages, and we just hand it to you to go, and we'll be behind you. This is how you do it. And it can be done. And we did it.
And there are hundreds of war veterans with their camouflage in like a cabinet ready to go back to war if they ever try that again. It's not like we're just handing a binder to some other team. Like, we will go and fight for that.
Nobody
needs to go through that ever again. So Garber, this was a valuable lesson for Don Garber, I think. I hope. I hope that, you know, this happens to him every year or two, every couple years, because the Crew are going to host MLS Cup for the next 15 years. I mean, we're going to just keep winning. We're going to get so tired of winning by the end of this thing. But anyway, you know, he needs to learn. This is the price that you pay for trying to put money above the communities that you claim to respect. So he fully deserved it. No sympathy for him whatsoever. Pete, at one time, Dr. Pete, like, turned around in Nordeca and was, like, pushing his hands to the ground. Like,
Jonathan was doing it too. I have pictures of it.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see Jonathan.
Jonathan was doing it too. He was like, guys, settle down.
Yeah. And I love Dr. Pete. Don't get me wrong, but I'm sorry, Pete, we got to teach this man a lesson. You know, someday. So, you know, it's the price you pay.
And just imagine if that had been a full house. Like, anyone watching at home would not, wouldn't matter if they tried to cut all the external mics or anything else picking up any sound. Oh. You would not be able to hear a thing. People in Cleveland, you know, would be able, Baker Mayfield, you know, would have been able to hear us booing Don Garber, yelling, Don, nonstop. And I mean, that was the best it could have ever been for you, Don, ever. That was the best case scenario. And you still just got booed versus the problem.
This is getting a little hostile over here.
Of course.
He's going to have to mandate teams. He's going to have to mandate teams that when the cup plays, that they're going to, and it would not surprise me if Major League Soccer does something like this. You have to play the Major League Soccer anthem while he speaks or something to like kind of protect him from the booze.
They're going to have to put him creative. They're going to have to put him in a bubble. You know,
yeah,
the pandemic will be over and they're going to have to put him in a bubble to protect him from all the bile.
They're going to get like one of those London phone booths and they're going to soundproof it and just put him in there with a microphone.
It's like the Pope Mobile.
Sounds like Doctor Who right now. Just stick him in a TARDIS and that's it.
That's exactly what they're going to do, Bart. They're going to spend all the expansion fees. They're going to spend all of it on a giant soundproof Pope Mobile for Don Garland.
They'll just wheel him out to midfield at the Pope Mobile. Yes. Yes, I love it.
Mark Abbott will be driving it and he'll be in the little bubble in the top.
No quarter given to this clown. I'm for haunting him to the end of his days. He's a piece of work, isn't he? Well, listen, there are rewards beyond hoisting the cup, and that involves us participating in other tournaments now. Ori, can you take us through what we can expect next year?
I sure can. So obviously, with how crazy this season was and the fact that preseason started in January and the crew won MLS Cup 13 days before Christmas and during Hanukkah, is a very long season, and they only played 28 matches over the course of 2020, with 27 games in the Major League Soccer season and then one MLS's back round of 16 penalty shootout loss to Minnesota that doesn't count towards anything.
Right.
So that was as if it was a friendly for them. But yeah, winning MLS Cup, you get some perks, and the biggest one of all is the fact that they're going to be playing in the CONCACAF Champions League. You know, you can put that UEFA Champions League anthem in your mind now and think of the Columbus Crew. So they will be one of four MLS teams. Well, actually, they are one of four American teams that will play in the competition, along with the Philadelphia Union, who made it as the Supporters Shield winners, the Portland Timbers, who made it as the MLS's back tournament winners, and Atlanta United were gifted a spot as the U.S. Open Cup champions of 2019 because the U.S. Open Cup got canceled in 2020 due to the pandemic.
Okay.
And if you don't know what the format is, essentially you have teams from around the CONCACAF region, four from the United States, four from Mexico, and then you have a couple of teams from around the region. You got some teams from Honduras. You have a team from Dominican Republic, a team from Costa Rica, and it's a 16-team tournament. They're drawn into a simple bracket. It's all two-legged. So round of 16, over two legs, quarterfinals, semifinals. The final is also over two legs. It usually starts around mid-February, and the final generally takes place around May. So it's a pretty quick tournament, and it's going to be happening during the beginning parts of the MLS season. Obviously, the 2020 CONCACAF Champions League is concluding now. There are actually games today as we're recording because essentially they had to stop the whole tournament because of COVID, and now they're sort of doing what the UEFA Champions League did. They're all eight teams in a bubble. They're going to finish out the tournament over a couple over like a week or two. So Columbus Crew right now, I mean, no MLS team has won this competition ever. In the history of the Scotiabank CONCACAF Champions League, no MLS team has ever won this competition. It's only been Mexican teams. And Kayla Porter's talked about it's an exciting thing to be in. It's awesome that they made it, and they want to get roster depth in there to be able to compete in a competition like that. Not to mention the U.S. Open Cup, which I, you know, now they could say that they're going to make a run for that. And then they're also going to sort of have like a Community Shield Super Cup type of game in the Campeones Cup, which is the MLS Cup champions against the winner of sort of like the Mexican League title. So Mexican League is really interesting in that they have two champions over the course of the year. So Club León was crowned the champions of first to play each other for the right to play the Crew. And that game could very possibly be in the new stadium. So there's a lot of trophies to compete for, four to be exact. It's going to be a full season of Crew soccer. And they've already made the announcements about some roster changes. We saw 22 players currently on the roster. They added Evan Bush as a goalkeeper after declining the contract option of Andrew Tarbell. We'll see if he does return. We don't know yet. Obviously, these moves are going to be coming thick and fast over late December, January period. But they need a team with depth. They're going to add a lot more pieces in different areas, and they're going to have to play a lot more competitive games. You know, this is going to be interesting to see, but how crazy would it be by the time we get to this time next year, maybe in 2021, if the Columbus Crew walk away as CONCACAF Champions League winners, they will earn a place in the FIFA Club World Cup in Japan. And maybe they're playing someone like Bayern Munich or Paris Saint-Germain or Liverpool, because whoever wins that CONCACAF Champions League, they're going to Japan for the FIFA Club World Cup in the winter.
So the winter of next year?
Winter of next year, yeah, will be the FIFA Club World Cup. And that tournament historically has only been 8 teams, the 7 Continental Champions League winners, and then the league winners of the host country, which historically that competition has taken place mostly in the Middle East. It's in Japan for 2021, and FIFA essentially is hoping to expand that competition further. They're kind of ditching the Confederations Cup, which is sort of a mini World Cup a year before the World Cup, a sort of a test, you know, tournament, but they're going to axe that tournament and they're going to try and make the FIFA Club World Cup more of an event. So hopefully in the future, CONCACAF, UEFA, CONMEBOL, and all these different continents will have more spots. So maybe we'll see the Crew get into an expanded tournament. We'll have to see, but this year sets up potential for success. And in 2021, if they can potentially repeat as MLS Cup champions, maybe grab another one of those other trophies, they cement themselves as a force to be reckoned with in Major League Soccer. And they started off this decade with a title, and they're hoping to win more trophies as the decade goes along.
Well, that leads to a Twitter question from Weather Vane, who writes, will there be a serious effort in the Champions League? And what do you need to do as far as roster construction to mount a serious effort?
I think there will be serious contention. I think Caleb Porter is really looking forward to the challenge. Him and Tim Bezbachenko have been in that position before. Caleb Porter managed Portland in CCLs. You saw Bezbachenko with Toronto FC as well in a similar spot. So he understands that tournament a little bit more. And I think you got a good idea of what the rotation can be like with this season because of how often the Crew had to rotate their lineup with the injuries and the condensed schedule. So, you know, expect someone like Aiden Morris potentially to play in some CCL games. Maybe we see something that people do in Europe, for example, Manchester City, where Zach Steffen is now going to be in goal for Manchester City for a couple Champions League games. You sort of have like a designated goalkeeper for a competition. Maybe Evan Bush is that goalkeeper. We've seen him in this competition with the impact between the sticks. Maybe we'll see him this time around with the Columbus Crew. So you do need extra squad depth. You're going to need more from your players. I think those types of games, as well as US Open Cup, you see the youngsters get into the team. I think Sebastian Berhalter also probably making appearances in that tournament. Maybe John Kemp too as another goalkeeper option. So it'll be interesting to see, but you got to build more depth in the squad. The Crew are going to be making moves for sure as December and January hits. I mean, 4 days post MLS Cup championship, and they already, you know, lost a couple players from that team, and they already are looking to make the squad better. And it's going to be really competitive. It's going to be quite a year for them.
Yeah, and I think the Crew will have to quickly decide whether they really want to truly compete for this trophy or whether they just want to participate in the tournament. Because if you're going to compete in CONCACAF Champions League, it's a different level than what you get in Major League Soccer, and they will need to kind of not only field their starters, but maybe bring in some reinforcements as well. I mean, think about Lucas Zelarayán, right, was on the bench at Tigres before he came to Columbus, right? So he was on the bench for a team, and he's our best player. So yeah, if they've got that kind of depth off their bench, you know, for that is, you know, a top-level DP in our league, we are going to really need to not only, you know, have our system working well, which it is, but also, you know, have really, really talented people. Just in order to kind of not get walked off the pitch by those Mexican teams.
Well, yeah, and the Mexican teams are going to be Monterrey, Cruz Azul, Club America, and Club León. So 4 very, very good teams.
Yeah.
I'll just make the point that we're dealing with owners that are NFL owners. You know, yeah. Jimmy Haslam that's got a billion. And again, the you know, drop tens of millions of dollars on a, you know, year contract for NFL players like it's nothing. And so I think you've still got to deal with all the, you know, archaic MLS stuff, your TAM and GAM and spending guys down or whatever you need to do to get underneath the salary cap. But I don't think it is beyond the realm of possibility that, you know, that you've got Bezbachenko and you've got Caleb going to them and saying, look, we're coming in, we're playing in this new stadium. We want to compete for this trophy. Okay, what's, you know, what's it cost? Well, here's what we need in order to improve, to get to something where we can. I'm saying, that's it. All right.
Yeah. Well, and if you were at the stadium, Dee and Jimmy Haslam came over with the trophy, and Jimmy Haslam was going crazy. He was like lifting the cup and shaking it and just going nuts. Like, he was loving it. And this is a guy who's
in the Cleveland Browns for a while. There's a picture of that in the gallery.
Yeah.
I mean, that's his first trophy.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he's spent all this money on the Cleveland Browns, has never actually succeeded. And then he goes and, you know, and him and his wife buy the crew.
Yeah, and, you and me both, you know, Jimmy.
Just
spending,
you know,
a lot of money on the Browns and never having any success.
That's right. I'm still waiting on a refund for some of those quarterback jerseys I purchased over the years. In all seriousness, I mean, they really seem to be invested in this. They seem to be having fun with it. Yeah, it would not surprise me, you know, that you can sign a world-class talent for less money than, you know, a off-the-bench guy makes for the Browns. So, who the heck knows what they do this offseason, but if they really want to splash the cash, I mean, this is the year to do it. I don't know, Ori, if you have any information about this, but I would be curious to know what kind of money we get for competing in these different tournaments just from a TV standpoint. Like, if we're playing in this Campeones Cup, like what's the purse for that? What's the runner up get, you know, just for being a participant in it? You probably get some sort of money for that.
Yeah. That's something I want to learn as well. Yeah. Cause I've been thinking about that too. I don't know the exact details, but like, obviously, you know, following European soccer and also being someone that plays Football Manager in FIFA, that sort of has an understanding of a real life management monetary gains. You gain money from winning a title. You earn television revenue money from being in more competition. So I wonder what kind of extra money the club would get through playing in these competitions. It'd be really interesting to find out. So Pat probably and Patrick probably have more knowledge on that than I do, but it'll be interesting to see if they get some monetary gains from just competing in these competitions, not just winning. Yeah.
Well, in that Campeones Cup, I mean, I would play that in Mexico just from the standpoint of how many tickets you're going to sell. I mean, those Mexican soccer stadiums are gigantic. I mean, if you're playing in Azteca or someplace like that.
Yeah, but from playing condition perspective. 80,000. Yeah, but from a playing condition perspective, you know how hard it is to play at Azteca with the altitude and the weather? That is so challenging. But hey, they were in Orlando confined to their hotel rooms for 3 weeks. That's probably the hardest thing. That's probably harder than playing in altitude.
Yeah, and I'm just not sure if this team is like ready to compete in the CONCACAF Champions League, and I will gladly eat crow if I'm wrong about this. But, you know, I kind of think just get the money, strengthen the squad, and keep kind of pushing forward with the program that we're on. This is a really good team. We've got most of our starters coming back. There is nothing that can stop this team from you know, winning the cup again. I was talking to a friend of mine in the parking lot, you know, at MLS Cup. You know, I saw him in the stadium right after the match, and one of the toughest guys I know. I'm not going to say who it is, but he was crying. And, you know, I've never seen this guy cry ever. I've seen this guy get like punched in the face and like just doesn't even faze him. Right? A really tough guy, really tough guy. And he was crying. He said, like, I'm sorry. And he was like apologizing for it. I'm like, no, sorry, man. Like, it's awesome. Yeah. But I was talking to him after the game, and you know, I was saying, you know, just think about this. Like, we did that without Darlington and Pedro.
Yeah.
Like, we did that. We took on Seattle, the team that everybody thought were the favorites. We beat them 3-0 without Darlington and Pedro. You add one more big piece to this team, like, you know. Then even an injury doesn't stop it, right? You know, then you can have a key injury and it's like, you know, you just keep rolling. You got a super strong team. So I am really optimistic about the future. And, you know, we'll see what happens. And a good start with Porter now. You know, we're back on track. The Haslam family, the Edwards family, they seem serious about it. And we're going to get to run for it in that brand new stadium as defending champs. It's going to be amazing.
So real quick to kind of put a bow on the Champions League talk, the style of play for these top clubs in Liga MX, in the Mexican top level, how does that compare and contrast to MLS? Not so much in terms of talent, because you've already established that obviously there's a lot of talent down there, but just style of play. How does that compare?
I don't watch a lot of League MX, but from what I've seen in the past and from what I remember and highlights that I catch, I'm definitely going to catch some highlights and some games of the remaining 2020 CCL over the next couple of days. You know, the first game is going to start pretty soon at the time of recording this. Montreal taking on CD Olympia, and that match actually just started as we're recording. And everything is already in the second leg. Tigres is going to play New York City FC also on Tuesday night. So I would say that there's a sense of flair with a sense of passion and aggression as well. I mean, I think of Mexican style of play, and it's kind of like that. You see the passion. It's sort of like a hybrid between an American style and a South American style as well. Like South American football, you see a lot of passion. You see aggressiveness from the players. Every player is in it, and they give so much effort. And you also just see the mixture of flair, and you see the mixture of hard tackles as well. And you kind of see that as well in the Mexican league and from these teams. So it's going to be a challenge. I mean, only Mexican teams have won this competition. And that just proves how good their league is and where their best teams are compared to the best teams of Major League Soccer. And I think Caleb Porter, not just from the perspective of being a member of the Columbus Crew, but being an American coach for an American team in Major League Soccer, is probably thinking like, you know, hell, if we could win as the first MLS team in this competition, assuming an MLS team doesn't win in 2020, you know, that's a monumental achievement for us. So they have a chance to potentially do something incredibly historic. And even though it's not the U.S. national team, you know, the U.S. national team is obviously a big representation of where American soccer is. But if a team like the Crew or the Union or the Timbers or Atlanta or any of these American MLS teams can go out and win a CONCACAF Champions League, that's another stepping stone towards the push of making American soccer great again, I guess, after not making the World Cup in 2017. Because, you know, the competition in North America is to be better than Mexico. That's what the United States has always thrived to be. But, you know, Mexico has been a team that always make the World Cup. They at least get out of the group stage. They never can make the quarterfinals. But from a club level as well, you want to see teams from your country perform well in these big competitions. I mean, look at Spain as a perfect example. Spain, from a national level, were dominating international tournaments in the late 2000s and the early 2010s, winning three straight major tournaments. And around that same time, only Spanish teams were winning the Champions League and the Europa League. We saw Real Madrid go on their dynasty run. Sevilla always wins the Europa League. And that's when you kind of have a sense of a system is working in these countries. So, you know, this is something that they could win that's pretty historic. Unless an MLS team, unless Montreal, New York City, LAFC, or Atlanta could come up with some miracles in these second legs over the next 2 days and make it to the semifinals.
Are these games, can we find them anywhere to watch them? I'd like to watch them.
I think most of them are going to be on FS2.
Oh, or all right. TUDN. I got that.
Okay. Yeah. So.
All right. Well,
or
I'm going to have to
USL YouTube channel. I'm looking at the channels right now.
Well, so. Listen, we have questions about, like Tom wrote on Twitter, what do you think the keys are to repeating? I feel like this is, we have another podcast in us to kind of put to bed the championship season and look ahead. And certainly we have a lot of time on our hands. So I think we need to reassemble again at some point during the holidays or something. We'll figure it out. But I feel like there's so much more to talk about. I mean, we traded for a goalkeeper today. So, and there have been roster moves. There's going to be more roster moves in the next couple of days. So if you guys are amenable, I would like to reassemble during the holidays and we'll, you know, have a little holiday party. We'll have the holiday party we can't have, and we'll talk about this stuff because we're kind of this already, so we probably need to wrap it up. But thank you, Ori. I appreciate your expertise in the area of these other competitions. I just really haven't followed them at all because they're world soccer. You got to pick and choose.
And it's the first time in a decade. It's the first time in a decade the Crew are in this competition.
So suffice to say, we're not going to be playing any little friendlies next year against you know, traveling European teams. We don't have time for that.
No. I mean, and one thing for next summer that's going to be very, very interesting because of all the cancellations in 2020. Next summer, you've got the Euros, you've got the Copa America, you've got the Africa Cup of Nations, and you've got the Gold Cup scheduled right now. And you have the Olympics.
And we got to start qualifying for the World Cup, too, at some point.
So, but how many of those crew players get selected for those competitions?
Yeah.
And how will that affect them in the regular season or in other competitions? So,
and then we all have the MLS salary cap and all the rules that you need to follow. There's a lot to get to. So let's reassemble again in a week or so, sometime over the end of the year. And we'll get into that stuff because I feel like there's a lot, and there's a lot we're going to learn in the next few days, right, guys? Yep. About who's on the team, who's not, who's coming back. We can sign free agents pretty soon. There's some great speculation. Mr. Torres on the website writing about some guys that we could bring in who are out of contract that might help fill in some depth. So we will get to all that in the coming days. I look forward to talking to you guys again. Feel like we should. So let's do it. All right. All right. Oh, Brett, Alex says bring back Pipa. Is he out of contract?
Player manager. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think
We already have a manager.
Federico Higuain. Yeah, but we can have an assistant coach in Federico Higuain.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, Ezra Hendrickson is highly touted to potentially get a head coaching job. I mean, he's done a phenomenal job with the crew. But, yeah, Pipa, do like a Wayne Rooney with him. Have him be a player coach.
My one regret was that Pipa couldn't be there for that match. That was my only regret was that he was absent. Yeah, yeah.
I love Will Trapp, too.
But, and that's roster construction. They got it right. So
Austin didn't snag either of those guys, right?
No.
Austin took it. And then they traded one of their picks 5 minutes after they got it. Because if there's anybody that Mr. Precourt can appreciate, it's a guy who's not in town very long.
Did they trade it for some equipment to detoxify dirt by any chance?
Somebody.
Or did they have to pay for that?
I think their fifth pick was a bag of barbecue because Anthony was hungry.
That makes sense.
Oh, boy.
All right. Well, guys, let's reassemble again in a week or so, and we'll look forward instead of back. Maybe we'll do a little bit more celebrating. Why not? Well,
why not?
It was great.
2020 is almost over.
I mean, good Lord. We need to put that to bed for sure. The best thing by far to happen in 2020 was the crew hoisting MLS Cup, and it's not even close. For Ari, for Bart, for Alex, for Sam, my name is Brian. If you get a chance, listen to my radio station, CD92.9, or if you are old school, you can check us out on AM 1580.
I love it. VKO, baby. Yeah, crank that Africa.
Let's do it. Yeah, well, I played it over the weekend on the phone. Oh, yeah. Alex, thank you, by the way, for your pledge request. I do appreciate that. We heard from some crew fans over the weekend. Thank you, guys. And we'll talk to you soon on the Mass Report podcast. Glory to Columbus! We're out.
Here we go!